You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller. So it's episode 157 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations, guys, and today's a little interesting. It's Tuesday, we're recording this, and Southwest got their first 737 MAX delivered today.
Yeah, with incredibly little fanfare.
Yeah, like no one noticed. I mean, I guess there is a hurricane in, you know, the Gulf Coast. And
yeah, that's really the issue, right? They have a hub shut down. They had to evacuate planes out. They've got thousands of employees sort of in distress. Hobbies still closed, if I remember correctly, as of right now. So there's a lot going on, but they did take delivery of the plane.
Awesome. Have they said where it's going to be flying?
Sort of. The initial routes, they're actually going to have 9 running by day one, you know, what they're calling day one, which is October 1st for them. And the first route is, in a nice nod to history, they're going to do the triangle of San Antonio, Dallas, and Houston.
Sweet.
And then a whole bunch of other flights, too. But that's sort of like, those are going to be the first morning flights out, and then everything else will pick up from there. So they'll position them out in the network and whatnot. But they'll have 9 flying on day one. They'll have 14 flying by the end of the year. And they've got 200 on order total. Uh-huh. So they're also finally retiring all of the classics, their 300s, which is nice. I got the great pleasure of flying on one of those last week when I was out in California on the book tour.
They still have 300s? I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I thought they were all 700s for some reason.
Yeah, they got a few classics left.
Huh.
It's pretty awesome.
Wow.
Except not really. Those are like planes they never bothered to install the Wi-Fi on. It's a lot of things like that. And needless to say, the world is pretty happy they're retiring those.
Oh, man. Wow, that's cool. I wonder if I might just take a flight on Southwest just to try out one of these 737 MAXs.
Going to be the almost identical interior to the other aircraft they fly, the 800s.
But it sits up higher, right? Like the MAX
Yes.
sits up higher? Yeah, that's what I thought.
It sits higher. It's got a quieter engine. There's a few things, you know, as a proper av geek, you should notice. But as a regular passenger, you probably won't.
Okay, gotcha.
And it sits up higher because the engines are larger.
Yep.
And so they had to raise it up. The new, is it Leap, right?
Yep.
The Leap engines are much larger, which more efficient and whatnot.
Yeah. Higher bypass ratio or something like that, so... Some nerdery.
Which I'm embarrassed to admit, I actually don't understand the bypass ratio stuff.
You got to watch a video on how jet engines work.
I should probably do that one of these days, shouldn't I?
Yeah, the bypass ratio is just the compression factor.
Yeah.
Okay. Doesn't help me. I'm assuming there's some magic involved somewhere in there.
Garbly gook fuzz.
It's how much the engine is squeezing the air
through.
Okay. Yes. Like I said, there's some magic in there.
Yeah.
I'm completely okay with flying being based on magic.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's like taking a fire hose and attaching it to a shower head. The bigger the fire hose, the more pressure will be coming out of the shower head.
You've lost him. You've lost him, Fuzz.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
he's been traveling a little bit.
He has been. He has been. He's going to be traveling more, too, so we gotta let him have a little bit of mental break.
He's been on a world tour.
We have a listener question. This is from Lee. He left it on the Patreon site for us. I'm just going to read it. It's a little long, but I'm going to read it so our listeners have an idea of what he's asking. A random segue from our Alaska Milk Run coverage. He was playing around on UA.com and noticed that they sell flights to Ketchikan on Alaska. Obviously, Alaska doesn't code share or partner with United, and it appears the flights don't earn any United premier qualifying miles, premier qualifying dollars, etc., or even redeemable miles. He wasn't previously aware of this, presuming that Alaska's very public tie-ups with Delta and American would preclude such arrangements. So he said it might be interesting for you guys to do a short segment on this, and what kind of arrangements do these give as benefits to the, like, what benefit do these have for our different carriers? Or is this just a nice little niche thing for local carriers to get people to little-known places around the world?
Well, I mean, in the case of United, with the, you know, I did look into the faring aspect of it, and what it's doing is it's actually selling you two different fare types. So if I'm doing, like, Newark to Ketchikan, it's selling me a United fare Newark to Seattle, and then Seattle Ketchikan is actually an Alaska published fare. So as the industry calls it, it's called end-on-end ticketing. So it's a single ticket but different fare types. And really, there's a number of reasons to do that. One would be if you miss a flight, you're protected on the whole thing. Versus if you have multiple tickets, you know, in this case, United would issue the ticket. If you miss, something happens to New York, Seattle, they would take care of you on everything after that. Whereas if you had two tickets, there's no obligation to do that.
Mm.
Also gives United the ability to sell tickets to Ketchikan, someplace they probably won't fly because there's just not much of a market for them to fly.
And so on that, Foz, like you said, it's end-on-end ticketing. Isn't that usually, like, end-on-end ticketing is something you see in fare rules as usually prohibited or not allowed?
More and more these days.
Yeah.
You want to know why?
Why?
End-on-end ticketing is also what enables fuel dumping.
Ah, yes. Good old fuel dumping.
And generally what you'll see is more of those end-on-end rules on the cheaper fares.
Yeah. It also... Yeah, it's partly because of fuel dumping. I would say that's really what started the move to get rid of it 5 or 8 years ago when fuel dumping was big.
And we should explain that. Fuel dumping is where you add a segment to the beginning or end of an itinerary between two points that drops or lowers the amount of fuel surcharges on a ticket.
Yeah.
And that's usually triggered based on the fact that because it's a different carrier and that carrier doesn't have the ability to do a fuel surcharge and it breaks the ticketing mechanism.
That was a big part of it many years ago, or not many, but a few years ago. More and more these days, the end-on-end prohibition is also being used to get around the fact that airlines want to sell things like basic economy or have the cheapest fares not allow for, you know, half and half with one airline and another, but don't want to break their interline agreements, the relationships they have that let them sell tickets with each other's, you know, flights involved. So on a, you know, you used to be able to buy what was, you know, a round trip ticket that would include American one way and United the other, and it was end on end essentially. And in some cases, that's still possible, but on many of the cheaper tickets now, it is in fact not possible. They dropped the end on end, or they prohibited end on end in that way, or limited to. Sometimes it's prohibiting end on end. Sometimes it's just limiting it to only, you know, home carriers or alliance or joint venture carriers. But all of that ends up in a scenario where it's harder and harder to buy tickets on multiple airlines, except when you get into sort of these edge cases where the airline doesn't fly there themselves.
Yeah. Yep. That makes
or doesn't
sense.
Doesn't have a joint venture partner that also flies there.
Yeah. And so you'll see this, and you see this, like what Lee's pointing out and what we mentioned on the show, you'll actually see it on United quite a bit. They offer some Dragon Air flights. And Cathay. I've seen Cathay, and it's not to like random places. It's places they actually fly. Or it's places that have partners that fly there, but they still offer these other carrier tickets as well.
Are covered by the joint venture with ANA.
What's that?
Are they places that are covered by the joint venture with ANA?
I'm not sure. It's like I've seen it to Hanoi, I've seen it to Saigon, I've seen it to.
Yeah, I would bet Vietnam's not covered in the joint venture.
Mm.
I've actually even seen it sell me an American ticket.
Where?
Yeah.
Bangor, because they only serve it seasonally, so they don't pull it out of their system in the off season. So when they do a back end query, it's returning the AA flights.
Hmm.
So it'll sell me Newark, Reagan, Bangor.
Wow. Is the price really, really high for that?
It's not. It's a couple hundred bucks, which is more than it should be. But yeah.
Wow. Interesting. So I hope that answers your question, Lee. If you have follow-up to that, we're happy to answer it. Thanks for asking one. So Qantas is saying they want to really, really fly to London nonstop. And this would be 20 or so hours of flying, right?
Yeah, just over 20. They've done it once before. Believe it or not, there was a delivery flight of a 747-400 that flew London to Sydney nonstop. And it took, I think, 20 hours and 20 minutes or so.
Sheesh.
Which is a little longer than expected. But that one was also, if I remember correctly, it had like 4 tons of fuel left, which isn't a lot. But it was basically, you know, down to the bottom of the tanks when it finally landed. And got there with like 25 or 30 people on board, mostly just, you know, crew. So they had enough crew to keep it running for that long. They're talking about doing it for real, like every day.
So one of the things you know, we were talking about this ahead of time. That was peculiar is that, you know, the comment was that there's no plane that can do this today. I thought the 77L was able to do these kinds of long legs.
Not that long. This is longer than even the L can handle.
Okay.
And so they would do this on an A350?
Well, there's no plane that does it today, right? The A350-900 ULR, which is the 900 with a few extra fuel tanks installed and a couple other small upgrades that was, in theory, designed for Singapore Airlines to do its flights to the nonstops to the U.S., should get it close. Arguably, it's like, I think it was like 50 or 80 nautical miles away based on the cut sheet numbers. But that's also assuming no headwinds, perfect weather, et cetera. So it would be that plus fuel penalty or that plus some other minor tweaks that would also, you know, not fuel penalty, payload penalty, obviously. Something else that would get there. Basically, you got to turn a plane into a flying gas can.
Hmm.
And then some. The theory is that the 777X-8 is of a similar sort of design for the ultra, ultra long haul routes. But again, it too is just not quite long enough in range.
And Qantas has said that they wanted to do, was it Perth before?
They're launching Perth.
Yeah, Perth, London. And that's
Perth,
that's,
London launches next year. They've got, that'll work on a 787-9.
And because that's about the same, maybe a little shorter than Singapore, Newark, right? I mean, it's, let me see actually how far that is.
I think I looked them up. I think it's close.
Yeah.
And I did that Newark to Singapore flight once. And F5s, you've did it a couple times, right?
I actually have never done it.
You did it? Oh.
I did it. I've done LA-Singapore. I've never got a chance to do Newark-Singapore.
Okay. I know our producer, Rolo, did it, right?
Rolo's done it a number of times.
Okay. Yeah, that just – I did it. Actually, he was on it with me when I went. That was when United had a mistake – or Singapore had a mistake and accidentally opened up a ward space because they took their whole booking system offline for a weekend to do upgrades. And so when they came back up, they had sold a lot more seats than they thought they would have. It was something like that a while back.
Yeah, Perth, London, Heathrow is 500 miles shorter than Singapore, Newark.
Okay. So by the time I took the Singapore-Newark flight, or the Newark to Singapore flight, it was the A340-500, and it was, which always was that. By the time I got to it, they had tried a bunch of different cabin configurations. I got the 100 business class seats layout. So it felt, you know, in some ways a little bit like a private jet. It was basically 1-2-1 across on a 340 back before that was, you know, what all the cool kids did. And it was a hell of a ride, but I still remember, like, you get on board, it was a 10:30 p.m. or so departure from Newark. And so at the very end of the night, the lounge converted. It was a partner lounge, but the Singapore flight were the only passengers left because everything else had already gone to Europe. And so they put out extra food, so we all had dinner in the lounge. And then you get on board. And they served a full dinner at departure. And so around midnight or so, I finally fell asleep and woke up 8 hours later or 7 hours later and still wasn't halfway. Right. And then you have another meal and then you sleep for another 6 hours. Then Rollo and I pretended to do some work. Like we were sitting next to each other. We put the partitions down and like pulled our laptops out and we're collaborating on something. I don't remember even what ridiculousness it was, but I'm sure it was, you know, was justified at the time. But. And then we took a nap again, and then we had another meal, and then it was still, like, a couple hours left to go.
Oh, man.
And so, you know, and I've done that. I've done Hong Kong to Newark in coach, which is, I believe, the longest United Airlines flight by duration at this point. The Singapore flight was at least in business. I've done some long ones in coach, too. I did both Newark to Delhi and back in coach. And I just am struggling to believe that so many people want to spend an extra, you know, 4 to 6 hours still in that same seat.
Yeah.
And yeah. I don't know. I've gotten older since then, but like, are there health concerns? Like, can it be safe to sit that long?
Oh, I mean, I can't even imagine. LA Singapore was late. Like you described, it was the same experience. Like you get on, it's an 11 o'clock departure. You get on, you eat, you fall asleep, you get up, and you're like, oh, I'm almost there. No, you're just barely halfway there.
Well, if Foz and I are doing San Francisco and LA to Singapore near the end of the year. So I get to experience this with you guys. I mean, I think the longest that I've done so far has been Hong Kong-Newark. And that was long. I think – I mean, I slept for most of it, I think. I was really beat. But Yeah, I don't think I could do it for 20 hours. I get DVT just thinking about it, honestly.
But you guys are doing it in business class, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. See, I just, and like I put myself through the coach thing. I'll do it if I have to. Should I did. I did Hong Kong Newark in a middle seat. It was economy plus, but it was a middle seat. I was sitting next to my wife. It made sense because it was a full flight. But like, and so I can do it, but I don't know. Like a few extra hours plus seats. Now they're going 10 across on the triple sediment instead of 9 across. Right. So when I did it, I had the slightly wider seat. All those things. I don't know.
Can you?
I guess the good news is on the 350, it's probably still going to be the wider seat.
I mean, can you imagine doing this in coach? I mean, can you imagine doing, like, Hong Kong? You've done it. It's, what was that, 14 hours?
Yeah, roughly. And I did, like I said, I did Delhi also, which is 14 one way and 16 the other.
So, I mean, you add it, you tack on another 6 hours. Like,
yeah.
Like, I just wonder about the restroom situation. Because after some of these long-haul flights, like, those restrooms are full. Like, they can't take any more human waste. And I just think, I don't know, like, how do you carry that much toilet paper? It's a full day with 300 other people. That sounds miserable to me.
Well, could you sustain that for 300 people? That's the thing. Do you do a less dense config?
I don't think that Qantas would have a separate fleet. Well, maybe they would. Who knows? But I mean,
if anyone would, it would be Qantas. They already do it today with their 747-400ERs.
True.
Right? They bought 6 of those, and Boeing made them 6 special planes with extra fuel tanks.
Yeah.
The difference, I think, in this case is to get extra fuel tank. Like, the other types that the 777X that they're considering, I think, already has all the extra fuel tanks, and now they're trying to figure out if they can get even more extra fuel tanks in.
Just take out the back, you know, bulkhead. We don't need that. Just put some more fuel tanks back there. Man.
I don't know, man. It's weird. It's bizarre. I still kind of would like, part of me says, oh yeah, if they offer it, I'd want to take it so I get the new longest flight. I haven't been all that entertained by any of the new longest flights because Newark Singapore was always longer. But
but this one is tempting.
So it's, there's an itch there.
If you do it in business, you know, maybe.
Yeah. I feel like a premium economy would be tolerable. I just don't know a thing I could do in regular coach.
I don't even think business is tolerable.
Right. Well, that's the point I get to. Is like, how many movies could they have that I want to watch?
how much work?
Like, how much can I sleep? How much? Well, forget work at that point. Like, that's the time you're like, please let there be real work for me to do. Like, even if we assume it's going to have the best Wi-Fi available flying today, is that enough? Even like, I don't know.
I gotta wonder about time zones too. Like, so, not knowing what time this leaves either place, I have to really think that it really screws with you time zone wise because of the time difference that's already there and the length of the flight. Like, Newark Singapore kind of made sense because it landed 2 days later in the morning, right?
Yeah.
And that
either next, way, still jet lagged to hell.
Either way,
you still have to change 12 hours of time that you have to go full flip very quickly.
Chances are, either way, you'll get off the plane delirious.
I get off the plane a lot less delirious than you guys.
Well, let's see what happens when you get to Singapore.
All right. That's fair enough.
Look forward to a full report.
So the CEO of Qatar Airways is now the chair of IATA?
Is that the chair of the board of governors or something like that?
It's
a one-year term. I know that.
Okay.
It's only,
I feel like this
term
is something that gets rotated around anyways.
Yeah, so he's got a one-year term. It might be the Board of Governors.
Yeah, it's the Board of Governors. I'm reading the Gulf Times right now.
Yeah, chairman of IATA's Board of Governors.
Who did he replace, does it say?
Go Chun Fong, the CEO of Singapore.
Okay. Interesting. I feel like he received an award for something at one of the recent IATA meetings.
Who, the CEO of Singapore?
Yeah. I remember seeing him get something at one of those dinners I've been to in the last couple of years, and I think it was IATA related.
Yeah, and it's a one-year term, and
yeah, I think it's mostly a figurehead position, but still, it is interesting to see him put in that role, given his, outspoken opinions on just about everything.
That's a good way to put that. I think you summed up the story completely right there.
Yeah, for what's, you know, somewhat of a figurehead, but a very political position, it's interesting to have someone as political as him in it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't have a lot
to say. Not as bad as bribing FIFA to win the 2024 World Cup.
Well, you're on the blacklist now.
You know.
You don't have any plans to go back to Doha anytime soon, do you?
I've got a Qatar Airways ticket from Hanoi to New York in a couple months. Does that matter?
That matters. I think we should scrub that from the episode. Just saying.
I'll take my chances that no one is listening.
Foz, you wanted to talk about U.S. Mobile and Wi-Fi on airplanes.
Yeah, this is a pretty interesting one. It was passed on to me by somebody, but it's basically – so there's a service that has existed for years called iPass for corporate customers, which basically companies can buy this for their employees, and you basically get access to Wi-Fi hotspots all over the world that you never have to pay for. Apparently, at some point, they've also included all the in-flight Wi-Fi with the exception of the United satellite stuff. So all the GoGo, all the Panasonic stuff is now included in that. And U.S. Mobile has now started reselling iPass to a standard end user at the low price of $10 a month. It's tied to device, so you can't have one pass and use it across multiple devices. But when you figure that two passes is cheaper than a single flight GoGo pass in some cases, you're still coming out well ahead.
Is the pass only good – so it's per device, so you can't, like, share that connection unless you have, like, a phone that can act as a router or something, a repeater?
Right. So, but you couldn't use the same login on your phone and your computer. You would need two separate subscriptions.
Gotcha.
But, I mean, I used mine today on AA coming back from Paris, and it quite candidly worked flawlessly.
And yeah, it's – go ahead.
I was going to ask. I mean, do you use yours, like, on your laptop or – like, what is your?
I actually have two. I have one on my laptop, on my phone. They both work flawlessly. I just connected the network and authenticated, and off I went.
Yeah, it's a really cheap way to get in-flight internet. I actually spoke a couple weeks ago with one of the executives at iPass about this product. They started really pushing sales to end users. They've got a deal with the Copenhagen Airport now. Reselling it with a partner there, working something out, to establish a loyalty scenario, which we never did quite get to the bottom of what the loyalty is, other than making it more convenient so people want to keep traveling through that airport because they know it all works and that's where they can, you know, re-up their Wi-Fi or whatever. But they're keen to do it. And when I talk to them about, you know, how do you deal with the fact that so many end users are going to want to just use the in-flight and not the other stuff, they didn't really care. They said for their corporate users, even though they said they only wanted the in-flight, there also was plenty of use on the other systems. But, you know, at some level, it doesn't matter where the usage is from a end-user perspective if you're paying a flat rate. Right? For iPass, it matters in terms of who they're reimbursing and what they're paying for, but it's an interesting setup.
From the website, it says they cover their partners are GoGo. What they're calling the European Aviation Network, developed by Inmarsat and Deutsche Telekom, and the Panasonic stuff. So, I mean, there's a list of airlines is like 18, 19 long.
Huh.
Yeah, it's a whole bunch.
One of which, ironically, is Air Berlin.
Oh, not for long.
And there's that topic covered.
That's all we got to say.
Fine.
It really looks like Air Berlin will die off. I mean, they've said now that they will stop their Berlin long-haul flights at the end of the year, right?
No, October 1st.
Oh, so it's even sooner than I thought. That's bad.
And
not all the long-haul, but was it L.A., Chicago? Yeah,
out of Berlin, everything. Out of Dusseldorf, they'll maintain some.
Okay. JFK, they're keeping a little longer, right? In theory?
Not the Berlin, but Dusseldorf.
Okay.
At least that's what I had read earlier. Pretty much anything, any long haul out of Berlin would go away. The Dusseldorf footprint would remain. I don't know for how much longer. But what I was reading was Lufty wants all the Berlin long hauls because, if I remember correctly, and Stephen, you might know, up until now, they haven't been allowed to do long haul out of Berlin. So this might be an opportunity for them to get to do long haul out of Berlin now.
Not allowed in what sense? They like, who says no?
The airport authority hasn't allowed it, basically. It's been linked to Air Berlin. They've tried to limit how much international traffic they've had in
Tegel. As an airport?
Yeah. And so part of that, I mean, since they closed Tempelhof, then it's really been – they've been trying to keep the traffic – I mean, people aren't happy about traffic anyway. So the slots go to Air Berlin because it is was or still is, I guess, their hub.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there was some discussion in another chat I was in about, you know, Germany doesn't really have slot controls, and I guess it doesn't, but the answer.
That's bull, because they clearly have told Emirates you can fly two flights or three flights to Germany.
Yeah, for the German carrier.
Yeah, exactly.
There's
slots, but it's not like slots like we think of slots. It's more like government access to the airport.
Okay.
So I don't know the specifics though, Seth, like on how they're.
Yeah, that's fine.
And I don't know, you know, will they open up all the flights that Air Berlin had internationally to Lufthansa? I doubt it. I'm not sure Lufthansa would want all of them. I could see JFK. I could see possibly LA. And then other than that, I don't think they would care about anything else.
I mean, I could also see them being told that you take everything or nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
Because there's other competition, like, you know, that they're saying Ryanair and EasyJet are also eyeing those assets.
They're not. Neither of those guys are going to run long haul. They can't.
Unless they acquired the planes with it.
Nah.
You know what I would like is if United.
I think that's a terribly, terribly far-fetched idea. I just don't see them doing it.
Hey, it's more likely than the new airport opening.
What isn't?
Touché.
I was going to say, it would be nice if United went back to their we're connecting capitals and brought on a Dulles Berlin flight. That'd be awesome. But
okay, you've just gotten back like 10 years. You realize?
Also, you don't live anywhere near either of those.
But it just gives me another option, because the Newark flight, it's never available, and you know, more seats is better for me.
Yeah, but they'd run it out of Dulles with a 7.5.
No, they wouldn't.
7.63.
Oh, so it'll always get delayed anyways.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll make it.
Just like Kwajalein.
Yeah. So let's talk about Pittsburgh. They made an announcement today that they're going to – it's like a new TSA program that they're going to actually allow people behind security that aren't flying, which is fascinating.
Yeah, basically – yeah, they – right, Pittsburgh had the Air Mall, which it launched way back in the day when it first built out its new terminal and grew, and it was a huge U.S. Airways hub, and it was, you know, they guaranteed in-town pricing, which I don't really know what that means, so it was supposed to not be, you know, quote-unquote airport price gouging, and then U.S. Airways de-hubbed, and then it shrank and shrank and shrank, and then 9/11, and then you couldn't get up inside security, and it's become a terrible shell of its former self. But the airport authority and, you know, some of the locals, they managed to negotiate with the TSA that they'll basically issue gate passes at a counter out in the ticketing area. And anyone who wants to, between 9 and 5, Monday through Friday, so obviously there's like one employee who staffs this, can show up and get a gate pass and go in through security. And that's, you want to pick someone up, you want to drop someone off, you just want to go to the mall and go shopping. Someone on my Twitter feed today was telling me that there's one store that apparently the only branch in town is at the airport mall. I declined to pursue further details on that, but I believe them that that's true. It's an option.
Wow.
I fly through Pittsburgh every once in a while for work. It's not that exciting of an airport. I don't know why you'd want to go there just to hang out.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about Pittsburgh on the show. We talked about Pittsburgh before in the show, and there's not a lot going on in Pittsburgh, at the airport at least.
Yeah, I think it's a good town. I've gone and like hung out there for some family stuff at one point. But
the town itself is great. The airport, not so much.
Yeah, well, it's harder when you lost 2/3 of your flights and you're still trying to keep the business running.
Do you think that's part of this? Is we want to encourage people to come here?
Yeah, I think it's all about trying to, you know, get more bodies out at the airport, either A, to prove to them like it's a reasonable place to come park, do your thing, and, you know, fly out eventually for the people that have been pulled away to Akron or some of the other airports nearby trying to save some cash. And so, two, I think anything that generates additional revenue in the, for the merchants means additional revenue for the airport.
So the interesting thing about Pittsburgh is it's if you're there and you travel in and out and you see versus the size of Concourse, it's evident that it was designed as a connecting airport. Because this, based on the massive size of the terminal itself, the security checkpoint is tiny. So that's my concern. It's a great concept that we're letting more people in, but at times when in some of the larger airports, security is already a disaster. Why even put more of a burden out there?
It's a good point. It's a good point.
Yeah, you know, you really think the TSA is going to care one way or the other? They're not going to change their staffing, are they?
No, they just keep reducing their staffing, don't they?
Well, maybe this helps them keep it higher for a little longer. I don't know. I get where you're coming from. I understand the concern there. Like, isn't this going to make the lines longer? I think the total number of people who are going to do it is far less than any given, you know, Embraer 145 flying on any day.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, so it's interesting. I, you know, flying back today, had a very interesting realization today. Like, CBP versus TSA are a tale of two stories in that CBP does a great job of recognizing global entry and separating every aspect of the step, whereas TSA just does the opposite because more and more people pre-check that don't actually pay for it. And so they clearly don't know how to manage the business to begin with.
Mm. Here's a question for you. Do you think this would get expanded to other locations? Like,
they said it's a pilot program, so in theory, yes.
Interesting. And I mean, but what's the incentive then for the TSA? Is it just something?
I think it's a pilot program for the airport to see if they want to expand it and make sure they want to keep it, not a TSA pilot program. Right. And this is not the only place that has done this sort of thing. I got into this discussion online earlier today, too. Like the airport, is it Westin in Detroit?
Yes.
Attached to the airport there.
Yep.
Got special permission to issue gate passes to guests who wanted to go to the restaurants inside. United obviously had the ability to issue gate passes forever for the lounges. Like, there are ways around the whole you're not traveling thing. It's, I don't know. It's at some point, it's, you got to decide if it's worth the effort to have someone sit there and type in names and have the link to the, you know, Department of Homeland Security database that can do the name check and then get it back and issue a boarding pass and all of those things. I also have no idea if they're actually paying the TSA extra to allow these people in, given that every time we buy a ticket, there's a TSA screening surcharge on there.
So the reason to do it, to answer Stephen's question, is it drives the numbers up from a statistics standpoint, so the TSA can say we're screening this many more people, which then turns into a funding discussion.
Yeah.
It's a numbers game.
Yep. Yeah, that's what I wanted to hear. Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. Well, we got a few more minutes. Do we want to talk about Allegiant?
Yeah.
I'll just let you take it away, Seth.
They want to run a hotel, a huge resort on the west coast of Florida, south of Tampa Bay.
Why?
And it's going to be amazing.
Why?
I actually don't think it's the worst idea in the world, right? Like, they already sell vacation packages just as much as they sell plane tickets, so if they can keep the hotel revenue as opposed to just the commission, that's good news for business. They run 30 to 40 destinations in and out of Punta Gorda, which is the local airport. And they did something like 50,000 passengers a month. They think they can grow that by another 300,000 a year, so call it another 25 to 30,000 a month. That's a huge increase. And whether that means more flights, more destinations, or just filling up the planes, I don't know. But all of those things seem like good idea when you're the only player there.
Mm.
Right? They're the only commercial carrier at Punta Gorda. And the best part is it's half hotel or one part hotel, and then many parts of it are going to be sort of condos, 1-, 2-, 3-bedroom apartments that they're selling outright. And some people will buy them and live there. Some people will buy them as investment properties and throw them into like a timeshare pool. And so between that and some other banks and this and that, a lot of it's going to be funded by other people, and they get to be the travel company still.
Hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean,
they're banking.
If you look at it from that perspective, you know, from the money perspective, I think their risk is low and their potential reward is high.
Yeah.
Does that make it smart? I don't know.
So they're banking on the idea that people will want to go there and go to this property or even to this area, and they're the only really carrier that's there. So they'll fly them, and they might save their property, or they're going to sell these units and make a little cash from that too.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's you get look like the snowbird situation. That's a part of the world where it's a lot of people that will, you know, can buy the one bedroom apartment, have their summer or winter home kind of thing, and rent it out in the summer or something like that. I feel like there's a lot of potential growth there. At the same time, I also wonder what's it going to be. You know, they're going to have like a grocery and a pharmacy and some of those basics in the compound. It's a 20-acre waterfront resort that they've already bought the land for. But I also wonder, like, what's it going to be when you add 30 to 40,000 more people a month into a relatively low density population part of the country,
yeah,
part of Florida? Like, are you going to overwhelm the infrastructure? What's it going to do there?
Interesting stuff. Fascinating, actually. Because, I mean, we've heard of airlines wanting to do similar things before, right? Not necessarily run a hotel. Well, JetBlue, they're going to have a facility in Florida, right?
They have they run a hotel in Florida for their employees.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, they're in the hotel business a little bit.
Not quite the same, but sure, we'll go with it.
And then there's
it's a nice space. The rooms are tiny.
Yeah, it's like a dorm, right?
They're not designed. The rooms are like tiny, tiny cubes designed to make people go out and sit in the common areas and socialize with their coworkers.
Yeah. What about, I think, like...
Historically, it's happened. Iceland Air still owns... The Iceland Air Group still owns 8 hotels, plus in the Iceland Air chain, plus another chain that's got, like, 10 out in the smaller towns, plus I just learned today, they run the Hilton in Reykjavik. It's actually run by Iceland Air Group.
Huh.
ANA Hotels has its partnership with IHG. SAS used to have the Radisson deal. Now, everything you know of is a Radisson Blu now. Apparently used to be a SAS Radisson. So, not uncommon. United used to own Westin.
Hence the betting by Westin on the PS flights.
Well, I mean, yes and no, but...
And United also had the hotel in Honolulu more recently, which the crew was all upset when they sold that.
Yeah, they sold that right after the merger, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they own the hotel that was used for crew layovers plus, you know, other people.
Non-refs.
And non-refs, yeah. Well, I mean, it was open to, like, the general public, wasn't it?
It was, but it wasn't like like a big name, so it was really an unknown quantity to most people. But it was a non-ref heaven. And that's why they were up in arms, because they lost their cheap hotel in Honolulu.
I would feel the same way if I liked going to Honolulu, I suppose.
I don't know why you'd want to go to Honolulu that much.
Hence my, if I liked going to Honolulu, part of my comment. But yeah, I mean, so it's not completely unheard of. And this is a one-off thing for now. Like, arguably, they could try to open a similar resort in Arizona where they do a ton of flights, down by Phoenix. And maybe one or two other locations, you know, could you move it something over closer to Orlando? Maybe, but getting real estate's much harder.
Maybe they'll buy Circus Circus.
It's part of the MGM group.
Is it?
Isn't it?
No, I think I can't imagine MGM would own that given its condition.
I thought Circus Circus was part of one of the groups.
You sure it's not already owned by Allegiant?
It could be.
Anyway. Is it really not one of the ones that I could have used for Hyatt credit?
Oh, I don't. In Luxor, you can. You might be confusing it with Luxor or.
No, I've done the Luxor. Yeah, Circus Circus, Family Friendly Resorts, MGM Resorts. Absolutely part of the MGM group, dude.
Wow, I had no idea. Yeah. How did that happen?
I don't know, but it's definitely on their website. I like the steakhouse there, for what it's worth.
I don't think I've been there.
I say that now. I was last there for a bachelor party 12 years ago, but I seem to remember liking the steakhouse pretty well.
I've gone into Circus Circus in the last 10 years. It is really not a place you want to go.
It wasn't a place you wanted to go then either, except to get to the steakhouse.
Exactly.
Okay. little kids running around the casino.
That's where Steven's going to be staying on his gig out there.
No.
Do you get to keep the cash difference, Stephen? I mean, are you per diem?
I'm not sure I'm going to stay at the Circus Circus even for that.
Let's not talk about embezzlement on the show. Practices, practices.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's a show, guys. On that note. Yeah, you can find us on Twitter, at DotsLines. MoreDotsMoreLines.com. Leave us a comment. You can leave a comment on Patreon if you're a subscriber there. You can send us an email. Love to hear from you. Thanks for listening, and happy travels. Bye-bye.
Take care.
See you.